Osho, the golden future, responses to disciples' questions, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 6.
Beloved Bhagwan, you said the other day that we are born alone, we live alone, and we die alone. Yet it seems as if from the day we are born, whatever we are doing, whoever we are, we seek to relate to others. In addition, we are usually attracted to being intimate with one person in particular. Would you please comment?
The question that you have asked is the question of every human being. We are born alone. And we live alone. And we die alone. Aloneness is our very nature. But we are not aware of it. Because we are not aware of it, we remain strangers to ourselves. And instead of seeing our aloneness, as a tremendous beauty and bliss, silence and peace, at easiness with existence, we misunderstand it as loneliness. Loneliness is a misunderstood aloneness. Once you misunderstand your aloneness as loneliness, the whole context changes. Aloneness has a beauty and grandeur. a positivity. Loneliness is poor, negative, dark, dismal. And everybody is running away from loneliness. It is like a wound. It hurts. And to escape from it, the only way is to be in a crowd, to become part of a society. To have friends, to create a family, to have husbands and wives, to have children. In this crowd, the basic effort is that you will be able to forget your loneliness. But nobody has ever succeeded in forgetting it. That which is natural to you, you can try to ignore it, but you cannot forget it, and it will assert again and again. And the problem becomes more complex because you have never seen it as it is. You have taken it for granted that you are born lonely. The dictionary meaning is the same, that shows the mind of the people who create dictionaries. They don't understand at all the vast difference between loneliness and aloneness. Loneliness is a gap. Something is missing. Something is needed to fill it. And nothing can ever fill it, because it is a misunderstanding in the first place. And as you grow older, the gap also grows bigger. People are so afraid to be by themselves. They can do any kind of stupid thing. I have seen people playing cards alone. The other party is not there. They have invented games in which the same person plays cards from both the sides, somehow one wants to remain engaged. That engagement may be with people, may be with work. There are workaholics. They are afraid when the weekend comes close by, afraid that what they are going to do, and if they don't do anything, they are left to themselves, and that is the most painful experience. You will be surprised to know that it is on the weekend that most of the accidents in the world happen. People are rushing in their cars to resort places, to sea beaches, to hill stations, bumper to bumper. It may take 8 hours, 10 hours to reach, and there is nothing to do for them because the whole crowd has come with them. Now their house, their neighborhood, their city is more peaceful rather than this sea resort. Everybody has come. But some engagement, people are playing cards, chess, people are watching television for hours. Average American watches television 5 hours a day. People are listening to radio just to avoid themselves of all these activities. The only single reason is not to be left alone. It is very fearful. And this idea is taken from others who have told you that to be alone is a fearful state. Those who have known aloneness say something absolutely different. They say there is nothing more beautiful, more peaceful, more joyful than being alone. But you listen to the crowd. The people who live in misunderstanding are in such a majority that who bothers about a Zarathustra are a Gautam Buddha. These single individuals can be wrong, can be hallucinating, can be deceiving themselves or deceiving you. But millions of people cannot be wrong, and millions of people agree that to be left to oneself is the worst experience in life. It is hell. But any relationship that is created because of the fear because of the inner hell of being left alone cannot be satisfying. Its very root is poison. You don't love your woman. You are simply using her not to be lonely. Neither she loves you. She is also under the same paranoia. She is using you not to be left alone. Naturally, in the name of love, anything may happen except love. Fight may happen. Arguments may happen. But even they are preferred than to be lonely. At least somebody is there and you are engaged. You can forget your loneliness. But love is not possible because there is no basic foundation for love. Love never grows out of fear. You are asking, you said the other day that we are born alone, we live alone, and we die alone. Yet it seems as if from the day we are born, whatever we are doing, whoever we are, we seek to relate to others. This seeking to relate to others is nothing but escapism. Even the smallest baby tries to find to do something. If nothing, then he will suck his own big thumb of the feet. It is an absolute futile activity. Nothing can come out of it, but it is engagement. He is doing something. You will see on the stations, on the airport, small boys and girls carrying their teddy bears. They cannot sleep without them. Darkness makes their loneliness even more dangerous. The teddy bear is a great protection. Somebody is with them. And your God is nothing but a teddy bear of grown up. You cannot live as you are your relationship. I'm not relationship. They are ugly. You are using the other person and you know perfectly well the other person is using you. And to use anybody is to reduce him into a thing, into a commodity. You don't have any respect for the person. In addition, you are asking, we are usually attracted to being intimate with one person in particular. It has a psychological reason. Because you are brought up by mothers, by fathers, if you are a boy, you start loving your mother and you start being jealous of your father. Because he is a competitor. If you are a girl, you start loving your father and you hate your mother because she is a competitor. These are now established facts, not hypotheses. And the result of it turns your whole life in a misery. The boy carries the image of his mother as the model of a woman. He becomes conditioned continuously. He knows only one woman so closely, so intimately. Her face, her hair, her warmth, everything becomes an imprint That's exactly the scientific word used. It becomes an imprint in his psychology. And the same happens to the girl about the father. When you grow up, you will fall in love with some woman or with some man, and you will think that perhaps we are made for each other. Nobody is made for anyone. But why you feel attracted towards one certain person? Because of your imprint. He must be resembling in some way your father. She must be resembling in some way your mother. Of course, no other woman can be exactly a replica of your mother. And anyway, you are not in search of a mother, you are in search of a wife. But the imprint inside you decides that who is the woman right for you. And the moment you see that woman, there is no question of reasoning. You immediately feel attraction. Your imprint immediately it starts functioning that this is the woman for you or this is the man for you. It is good as far as meeting once in a while on the sea beach, in the movie hall, in the garden is concerned, because you don't come to know each other totally. But you both are hankering to live together. You want to be married. And that is one of the most dangerous steps that lovers can take. The moment you are married, you start becoming aware of the totality of the other person. And you are surprised on every single aspect. That something went wrong. This is not the woman. This is not the man. Because they don't fit with the ideal that you are carrying within you. And the trouble is multiplied because the woman is carrying an ideal of her father. You don't fit with it. You are carrying the ideal of your mother. She does not fit with it. That's why all marriages are failures. only very rare marriages are not failures. And I hope God should save you from those marriages which are not failures. Because they are psychologically sick. There are people who are sadists, who enjoy torturing others. And there are people who are masochists, who enjoy torturing themselves. If a husband and wife belong to these two categories, the marriage will be a successful marriage. One is a masochist, one is a sadist. It is a perfect marriage because one enjoys being tortured, one enjoys torturing. But ordinarily it is very difficult to find, in the first place, whether you are a masochist or a sadist, and then to look for your other polarity. If you are wise enough, you should go to the psychologist and inquire who you are, a masochist or a sadist, and ask him, can he give you some references? Which can fit with you. But sometimes, just by accident, it happens that a sadist and masochist become married. They are the happiest people in the world. They are fulfilling each other's needs. But what kind of need is this? They both are psychopaths. And they are living a life of torture. But otherwise, every marriage is going to fail. For the simple reason, because the imprint is the problem. And even in marriage, the basic reason for which you wanted to have the relation is not fulfilled. You are more alone when you are with your wife than when you are alone. To leave husband and wife in a room by themselves is to make them both utterly miserable. One of my friends was retiring. He was a big industrialist. And he was retiring because of my advice. I said, you have so much and you don't have a son. You have two daughters, they are married in rich family. Now why unnecessarily bother about all kinds of worries of business and income tax and this and that? You can close everything, you have enough. Even if you live 1,000 years, that will do. He said, that's true. The real problem is not the business. The real problem is I will be left with my wife alone. I can retire right now if you promise me one thing, that you will live with her. I said, this is a sin. You are retiring or I am retiring? He said, that is the condition. Do you think I am interested in all these troubles? It is just to escape from the wife. And the wife was a great social worker. She used to run an orphanage, a house for widows, a hospital particularly for people. Who are beggars, cannot pay for their treatment. I also asked her in the evening, that do you really enjoy all this from the morning till the evening? She said, enjoy. It is a kind of austerity, a self-imposed torture. I said, why you should impose this torture yourself? He said, just to avoid your friends. If we are left alone, that is the worst experience in life. And this is a love marriage, not an arranged marriage. And they married each other against the whole family, the whole society, because they belong to different religions, different castes. But their imprints gave them signals that this is the right woman, this is the right man. And all this happens unconsciously. That's why you cannot answer why you have fallen in love with a certain woman or with a certain man. It is not a conscious decision. It has been decided by our unconscious imprint. Anu this whole effort, whether of relationship or remaining busy in thousand and one things, is just to escape from the idea that you are lonely. And I want it emphatically clear to you that this is where the meditator and the ordinary man departs. The ordinary man goes on trying to forget his loneliness, and the meditator starts getting more and more acquainted with his aloneness. He has left the world. He has gone to the caves, to the mountains, to the forest, just for the sake to be alone. He wants to know who he is. In the crowd it is difficult. There are so many disturbances. And those who have known their aloneness, they have known the greatest blissfulness possible to human beings. Because your very being is blissful. And after being in tune with your aloneness, you can relate. Then your relationship will bring great joys to you. Because it is not out of fear. Finding your aloneness, you can create. You can be involved in as many things as you want. Because this involvement will not be anymore running away from yourself. It will be now your expression. It will be now the manifestation of all that is your potential. Only such a man whether he lives alone or lives in the society, whether he marries or lives unmarried, makes no difference. He is always blissful, peaceful, silent. His life is a dance is a song is a flowering is his fragrance. And whatever he does, he brings his fragrance to it. But the first basic thing is to know your aloneness. Absolutely this escape from yourself you have learned from the crowd, because everybody is escaping. You start escaping. Every child is born in a crowd and starts imitating people. What others are doing, he starts doing. And he falls into the same miserable situation as others are. And he starts thinking as if this is what life is all about. And he has missed life completely. So I remind you, don't misunderstand aloneness as loneliness. Loneliness is certainly sick. Aloneness is perfect health. Ginsberg visits Dr. Goldberg. Yeah, you are sick. Not good enough. I want another opinion. Okay, said Dr. Goldberg. You are ugly too. We are all committing same kinds of misunderstandings continuously. I would like my people to know that your first and the most primary step towards finding the meaning and significance of life is to enter into your aloneness. It is your temple. It is where your God lives. And you cannot find this temple anywhere else. You can go on to the moon, to the Mars, and once you have entered in your innermost core of being, You cannot believe your own eyes. That you were carrying so much joy, so many blessings, so much love, and you were escaping from your own treasure. Knowing these treasures and their inexhaustibility, you can move now into relationships, into creativity, you will help people by sharing your love, not by using them. You will give dignity to people by your love. You will not destroy their respect. And you will, without any effort, become a source for them to find their own treasures too. And whatever you will make, you will spread your silence, your peace, your blessings into everything possible. But this basic thing is not taught by any family, by any society, by any university, and people go on living in misery, and it is taken for granted everybody is miserable, so there is nothing much. If you are miserable, you cannot be an exception. But I say unto you, you can be an exception. Just you have not made the right effort.
Beloved Bhagwan, the other day you talked about the third eye as a door for connecting with you and existence. Whenever I feel open, flowing, connecting with you, other people, nature, or myself, I mostly feel it in my heart as silence, an expanding spaciousness, and sometimes as radiating light. Beloved Bhagwan, is this the same kind of experience you were talking about, or is there a difference between connecting through the third eye or the heart? Or are there different stages?
Mm-hmm. Vedant Amod. What you are experiencing is in itself valuable. But it is not the experience of the third eye. Third eye is a little higher than your experience. The way the mystics in the East have categorized the evolution of consciousness is in seven centers. Your experiences belong to the fourth center, the heart. It is one of the most important centers because it is exactly in the middle. Three centers are below it and three centers are above it. That's why love is such a balancing experience. Your description that whenever I feel open, flowing, connecting with you, other people, nature or myself, I mostly feel it in my heart. As silence and expanding spaciousness, and sometimes as radiating a light. Is this the same kind of experience you were talking about? I was talking about the third eye, which is above the heart. There are three centers above the heart. One is in your throat, which is the center of creativity. One is between your two eyebrows, exactly in the middle. Which is called the third eye. Just as you have two eyes to know the outside world, the third eye is only a metaphor. But the experience is knowing oneself, seeing oneself, and the last center is Sahasrara, the seventh. That is at the top of your head. As consciousness goes on moving upward, first you know yourself, and in the second step you know the whole universe, you know the whole and yourself as part of it. In the old language, the seventh is knowing the God. The sixth is knowing yourself. The fifth is being creative. The fourth is being loving. Sharing and knowing others. With the fourth, your journey becomes certain. It can be guaranteed that you will reach to the seventh. Before the fourth, there is a possibility you may go astray. Because the first center is the sex center. This is for reproduction, so that life continues. Just above it, the sex energy can be moved upwards, and it is a great experience for the first time you find yourself sufficient. Sex always needs the others. The second center is the center of contentment, self-sufficiency. You are enough unto yourself. And the third center you start exploring who are you? Who is this self-sufficient being? They are all significant, and the moment you find who you are, the fourth center opens and you find you are love. Before the fourth, the journey has started, but there is a possibility you may not be able to complete it. You can go astray. For example, finding yourself self-sufficient, contented, you can remain there. There is no need to do anything anymore. You may not even ask the question, who am I? The sufficiency is so much that all questions disappear. A master is needed in these moments so that you don't settle somewhere in the middle without reaching the goal. And there are beautiful spots to settle. Feeling contented, what is the need to go on? But the master goes on nagging you. Wants you to know who you are. You may be contented, but at least know who you are. And the moment you know who you are, a new door opens. Because you become aware of life, of love, of joy, that you can stay there. It is so much, there is no need to move anymore. But the master goes you on that move to the fourth. Unless you find the purest energy of love, you will not know the splendor of existence. After the fourth, you cannot go astray. Once you have known the splendor of existence, creativity arises on its own. You have known the beauty, you would like to create it also. You want to be a creator. A tremendous longing for creativity arises. Whenever you feel love, you always feel creativity. Just as a shadow coming with it. And the man of creativity cannot simply go on looking outside. There is much beauty outside. But he becomes aware that just as there is a sky infinite outside, to balance it there must be the same infinity inside. If a master is available, it is good. If he is not available, these experiences will lead you onwards. And once your third eye is open and you see yourself, the whole expanse of your consciousness . You have come very close to the temple of God. You are just standing on the steps. You can see the doors. And you cannot resist the temptation to go inside the temple and see what is there. There you find universal consciousness. There you find enlightenment. There you find ultimate liberation. There you find your eternity. So these are the seven centers. Just arbitrarily created divisions. So the seeker can move from one to another in a systematic way. Otherwise, there is every possibility, if you are working yourself to get medals, particularly before the fourth center, there are dangers. And even after the fourth center, there have been many poets who have lived at the fifth center of creativity and never went ahead. Many painters, many dancers, many singers who created great art but never moved to the third eye. And there have been mystics who have remained with the third eye, knowing their own inner beauty. And it is so fulfilling. They thought that they have arrived. Somebody is needed to tell you that there is still something more ahead. Otherwise, in your ignorance, what you will do is almost unpredictable. Mike had decided to join the police force and went along for the entrance examination. The examining sergeant, realizing that the prospective recruit was an Irishman, decided to ask him a simple question. Who killed Jesus Christ? He asked. Mike looked worried and said nothing. So the surgeon told him not to worry, and that he could have some time to think about it. Mike was on his way home when he met Paddy. "Well," said Paddy, "are you a policeman yet?" "Not only that," says Mike, "but I'm on my first case." Man is such that he needs someone who has known the path and knows the pitfalls, knows the beautiful spots where one can remain stuck, and has the compassion enough to go on pushing you even against you. Until you have reached to the final stage of your potentiality. Okay, man.
Yes, so close.